Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Que han sido costosas.
Bueno, pues aquí está Higgins. Adiós. Ya cruzó la frontera, la 40, la 30, la 20, la 10. Touchdown. Primer.
Bengals podcast. I'm your host, Daddy McDuke. I'm joined as always by Dr. Roger Lecter, and John the Brain Shearer.
That announcer was so much better than Tony Romo. It wasn't even funny.
He was very good.
Yeah, that was interesting when I think DJ Reader tweeted that he was sick of hearing Tony Romo. Did you guys see that?
No, but speaking of DJ Reader, John, it's one of the things we want to talk about. We want to talk about T. Higgins and Duke Tobin's pronouncements on T. Higgins and what he's going to do with him, if he's going to trade him. We also, John, we want to talk about...
what they pronounce. Why don't you just say it now?
Well, we're going to talk about it.
Why don't we talk and about I want it right to now?
Did you say his name weird? Like, how did he pronounce it?
No. No, John. He said... Well, you know what? I can play
it's
the clip
Higgins,
for you.
Which is an old German
no.
name.
And, John, basically, so, as you know, that... That great journalist for the Cincinnati Enquirer, Kelsey Ann Conway, went on her own
show.
That
is not her name, by the way.
And she interrogated Mr. Tobin. And it's almost a one-minute clip. I'm going to play it for you now.
Okay.
Here we go.
Last year, T. Higgins was under contract to us. He was a guy that we drafted for that reason, to be a contributor for us. He's not under contract now, and so we're going to have to work through how to do that. And if it's possible, and we'll have to go through the gymnastics of that. And so it's a different scenario than it was last year. Trading a high level player that's under contract just because the future might demand it, that's never really on my mind. We'll see what happens this year. I want T. Higgins back. Everyone on our team would like to have T. Higgins back. Again, there's one pie and how big of a slice that takes and what else we can't do because of it, we'll have to determine and we'll see.
And you can share as much as you want or little on this. The whole like tag and trade thing has obviously come up because of it. Do you have a stance on the tag and trade?
I have no public stance on the tag and trade.
Oh, he's not coming back. He's not coming back. By the way, yeah, Tippy the Top, I love you too. He's not coming back.
I mean, you can see the investigative journalism by Kelsey Ann Conway, who has just moved around in her career so much.
T. Higgins is gone, guys.
But the interesting thing, John, tell me if I'm wrong. It sounds like for the first time that Duke Tobin is open to trading T. Higgins. And I think it's because he knows the value that receivers have.
Yeah.
And they don't want to pay him. But they're like, hey, we could get a first rounder for this guy.
First rounder, yeah. Get the young, fresh pair of legs. I think T. Higgins is great. I think T. Higgins is wonderful.
Yeah.
But when you can get a first round pick for T. Higgins, a disgruntled T. Higgins that you can't afford, what choice do you have?
John.
I mean, I don't know who's reporting that the Bengals can get a first-round pick. I think we can all assume. No, that's not what she said. I think we can all assume that the Bengals will want a first-round pick for T. Higgins. They typically either overvalue their assets, being their players, or they're just really stingy about it. But the only way that they can trade T. Higgins is if they tag him first and then trade him presumably immediately after they tag him, which would be right before free agency. And the whole point of that is to not only get the draft pick for this year, let's just say it is a first round pick, right? But it is also to use the $21 million in cap space that they would save if they get T. Higgins off the books after tagging him. The problem here is that there are no recent examples, at least that I could think of, or at least that I researched prior to the show, where any team who trades a player after they immediately tag them, there's no examples where they get a first round pick. Now, they could get a second round pick. They can get multiple day two picks. And I think a lot of Bengals fans would be okay with that. The problem, though, is do the Bengals want to stand their ground and want a first round pick? And is that possible to do so so far away from the draft, because maybe if they tag T. Higgins and then go through free agency with this $21 million against the cap on their books, which would prohibit them from making some moves for free agency, maybe by the time the draft comes around and a team doesn't get the receiver they want in the first round of the draft, they trade for T. Higgins and give up that first round pick to the Bengals. That could be the only way that they could get the price that they want for T. Higgins.
And I'd say the nasty little lesson that the Cincinnati Bengals learned this year is that our defense needs stars just as badly as our offense does. And so we're going to need some of that money to replenish the defense, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Reader coming? You said you were going to talk about DJ Reader. What's happening with DJ next year?
Well, DJ Reader, John, Duke Tobin said, we love this guy. He's a big part of what we do. Okay. We can get him for cheap because he's injured. We love that.
And he didn't say that. I'm sure he didn't say that. You were reading his mind. You said that.
I mean, when you listen to Kelsey Ann Conway in these interviews.
Her name is not Kelsey Ann
Conway.
She
gets some real information out of these people. John.
You're so confused. You're such a confused human. Like, you watch two channels, and then the two channels of things you're watching in your mind become one channel. You've been watching Fox and Friends. And then you're like, all the characters from Fox and Friends have now become the management and the reporters on the Cincinnati Bengals. These are two separate things.
Okay, John, here's the thing. DJ Reader, what does his contract look like? And how interested are the Bengals going to be bringing in a soon-to-be 30-year-old defensive lineman on his third contract?
I think before DJ Reader got hurt, he was already unlikely to re-sign with the Bengals. Considering he was about to be 30 years old, or he is going to be 30 years old, Bengals typically steer away from that. Not just necessarily because of just the age. They're not scared of necessarily the number. They're not, I guess, scared of that player, in this case, DJ Reader, being on the decline, right? They signed him when he was 26, about to turn 27, entering the prime of his career. They believe that that players around his age are at that point where they typically just are past like their best days, right? So I think there's still a team out there that would love a healthy DJ Reader. I'm sure the Bengals would as well for a certain price, but they would love to bring in a guy like DJ Reader for leadership and just the ability that he has, which is pretty rare in the grand scheme of things in regards to nose tackles. But I think now with his injury, because he's not going to be healthy until at the very least like training camp and preseason and all that stuff, so he can miss the full offseason's worth of work and practice. I think this gives him a chance to maybe come back to the Bengals, because I don't think he's going to have that much of a market, because he's not going to be able to pass a physical in March to sign for anyone. So he might have to wait a while, maybe after the draft, to see what his options are and to see what his health is at that point. And at that point, his price will be probably diminished compared to what it could be on the open market in March. And maybe the Bengals will have interest in bringing him back if they don't address the nose tackle position properly. But I think the injury definitely opens up a lot of doors to that. But unfortunately, he's still in that bucket of players that the Bengals typically don't like to bring back.
Yeah. John, okay. Well, that is sad because DJ Reader, I feel like it's not fair to hold the quad injury against him.
No.
John, correct me if I'm
wrong.
None
of this is fair. Like, he's not special. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's not immune to this type of treatment. Like, every player kind of goes through this if they have to go through this specific situation.
Yeah. John, speaking of specific situations.
Yeah.
The Joe Burrow killer is gone. I'm talking about Mike Macdonald, the only guy who could have stopped Joe Burrow in the regular season. He was so successful in Baltimore as a defensive coordinator, record-breaking season, and he is gone. He is the new head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Are we going to see Joe Burrow back throwing those 80-yard bombs with ease to Jamar Chase and the 70-yard bombs to Tyler Boyd and winning every game 41-17 against the Baltimore Ravens?
No. Because you're overestimating Mac McDonald's role in all of this. Listen, it's not just the Ravens who had Joe Burrow's number. Let's be honest. The Browns did too. Why? Because that's how it works. They're in the same division. They plan in the offseason to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got Joe Burrow, a Joe Burrow voodoo doll in their lockers. They got a Joe Burrow, you know, card where they've drawn a mustache on it in their lunch boxes. That's how it is when you're in the AFC North. When you're in the AFC North, your entire life revolves around how to beat Joe Burrow, and that's why they're going to bring someone else to plan to do what McDonald had done for them.
John.
The whole McDonald thing was, it was such a strong juxtaposition from where Don Wink Martindale was when he was the defensive coordinator for a few years. And then his last year in 2021, obviously he was, you know, he's always been a really aggressive play caller and blitzer, and Burrow back in that, you know, part of his career, he was eviscerating the blitz, right? He wasn't doing that so much this year because he was injured, but when he's on, like, he can get the ball really quickly and he can target those guys in one-on-one coverage. Like, that was that was, unfortunately for the Ravens, like, that was their Achilles heel. Like, they didn't have the cover guys on the outside to cover, you know, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, and they couldn't get the blitz home in time. And unfortunately, Martindale's scheme for the Ravens were just eviscerated. So McDonald did the exact opposite. He dropped back in zone. He only rushed three or four guys. He kind of disguised some blitzes. He kind of showed pressured simulated pressures, and then ended up dropping back six or seven. And that led to a lot of the explosive plays going away for the Bengals and Joe Burrow. It led to Jamar Chase having to win in different ways against the Ravens defense. Yes, he still won, you know, a couple games against them over the past 2 years, but it was very, very ugly, low scoring types of games where they just had to grind out and make every one of those possessions count. So I think the Ravens recognize the formula to best stop and limit Joe Burrow as best as they can. But McDonald, like, his I think his, you know, his overall defensive mind and, you know, prowess in that regard, like, it definitely will be missed. And I think they will do their best to hire someone that can implement a similar type of scheme, maybe someone that's worked with him over the past couple of years in that defense. It'll probably be some type of internal hire, but yeah, it's a definite win because his scheme was definitely the exact opposite of what the Ravens were doing before, and that's what led to those results.
Yeah, well, in other news, John, after lighting NFL defenses on fire, former Atlanta Falcons head coach Arthur Blank,
yeah,
goes to Pittsburgh.
Fill in the blank later.
Arthur Blank goes to Pittsburgh, where he'll get to work with Mason Pickett or Kenny Rudolph.
Yeah, and one of the greats. With,
as the offensive
QB legends.
As the new offensive coordinator of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Kenny Rudolph, John, is definitely a guitarist from the 70s. You can't convince me that he's not. Mason, yeah. Pickett sounds like a Confederate soldier, personally, but...
John, which one are we celebrating more? I mean, how happy are you by the fact that...
You said in jest that Arthur Smith was lighting defenses on fire. He lit his own offense on fire in Atlanta, and he got plenty of flack for kind of big-braining himself and not utilizing the players that were drafted to him in the top 10 on offense. And
who are those players? Who are those players, and why do you think they didn't reach their potential?
Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson, who on the same offense would scare a lot of defensive coordinators. But albeit part of it was underwhelming quarterback play from Desmond Ridder and company. But it was also just like they were almost like decoys in that offense. And I don't know if just play calling on top of managing the game as a head coach was just far too much for Arthur Smith, or he just forgot everything that he was doing with the Tennessee Titans when he was just overusing the likes of A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry with the Titans. So I think that's more or less going to be what the plan is with Pittsburgh. Obviously, a great understanding of under center play action and diversifying the run game. And obviously that's what the Steelers are trying to do. They're trying like hell to get anything out of Najee Harris. And I think Jalen Warren's a good player too, but they have receivers that need to get more creatively involved too. So maybe the switch back to just being the offensive coordinator would do well for Arthur Smith. But if I'm a Steelers fan, I don't think really this hire really moves the needle. It still really depends on who's going to be the quarterback. And until they bring in a serious guy there, I don't really see how Arthur Smith can do much.
Yeah, but kudos to the Steelers. How is it that they can be so bad and every year do so well? I mean, it's got to be Tomlin. It's got to be Mike Tomlin. What else is it? I mean, the team doesn't look good, and then they don't have a great year, and look at how far they got.
Yeah. Well, they always have a nastiness. They always seem to win in the trenches, the Steelers. No. It's like you can't kill them. They just won't die.
It's like a roach or something.
Yeah.
Not like I would ever kill a roach.
Well, I think you just admitted to live on air. John, all right. I want to move on to something more timely. Okay. I want to say to the NFL fans out there, how dare you compare Brock Purdy to Joe Burrow?
What do you mean?
these guys are polar opposites. And I don't just mean that Joe Burrow was drafted first overall, Brock Purdy was drafted last, but I mean, Joe Burrow is the system. And his coaches have gone on record essentially admitting that. Brock Purdy is the beneficiary of the greatest offensive system in the league right now. A Kyle Shanahan offense that saw Jimmy Garoppolo go to the Super Bowl. And Brock Purdy has the best tackle in the league blocking for him. Brock Purdy has a far better offensive line. Joe Burrow was like barely able to breathe in those playoff runs where he was, you know, essentially just trying to survive, you know, not drown back there behind that offensive line. I think that, and the reason a lot of people, what people are doing nowadays, John, is they're throwing up these stats, trying to say, hey, look, Brock Purdy's the next Joe Burrow. And, you know, they talk about the similar completion percentage, around 70%, the similar win-loss record in their, you know, or touchdown to interception ratio in their second years, right? 34 to 14 for Burrow, 31 to 11 for Purdy, and the average yards per game, 288 for Burrow, 267 for Purdy. John, this is like the most basic level of NFL analysis in the world.
That's not the most basic level. I will give you the most basic level. Throw up the graphic again. Get my face out of here. Throw up the graphic. You see the faces that these two are making, right? On the right, you have just a young, vibrant kid in Brock Purdy who knows he doesn't belong here, right? He knows that he's in way over his head. He knows he's in the perfect situation. All he can do is just sit back and enjoy all of the success that has been given to him, that he's barely doing anything because of it. He's doing his best trying to throw these games away with interceptions or with touchdowns that bounce off the face of a safety trying to catch the ball. He's just having the time of his life because he knows he doesn't belong here. The guy on the left, however, stern, focused, determined, right? The production above his head in that second year, like that was the expectation, right? He knows that he can do better. He knows that he can still grow, and he did a phenomenal job anyways. These two are not the same at all. That's the most basic, by the way.
They're not the same, but I think that the question, it begs the question, so what? I mean, at the end of the day, it's about winning and losing games. And Brock Purdy can win games. I've seen that kid play. He's got heart. He throws nicely on the run. Okay, so he's a systems QB. So maybe that's what they needed. If he's filling the role,
oh, he's doing a great job. But it's
yeah. But would Joe Burrow even be better on the 49ers? I understand he's a better quarterback. But it's like if the speed limit is 65.
Hold on. If the speed limit is
65 and you got a Lamborghini, who cares?
Yeah,
no. You're 65 John. And my 65 in my Toyota Corolla, same thing.
Can we just review the facts here? Brock Purdy was losing by, what, 3 scores, John, at home in the playoffs. And then the Lions dropped like 5 clutch passes.
And they just unraveled. The Lions were eating people's legs.
No. Well, that's how they got in that position. But, John, they crumbled. They crumbled. Their receivers let them down. I think that's the biggest thing. I was actually very impressed with Jared Goff. I really was.
Me too. Yeah.
I think Jared he made Goff all the right good, passes.
Yeah, he looked good.
He's a better quarterback. The Lions dropped a lot of passes. They dropped an interception that ended up being essentially a touchdown. And then the Lions fumbled on the
fall. It wasn't going to be pass interference on that touchdown. What was the flag? Like
and then they fumbled in the next possession. The Lions basically got the 49ers back in that.
And there was the dumb call.
Oh,
the fourth down. The fourth down where they should have done the kick.
Yeah. Well, guys, I'm sorry, but We have to cover the news here and the breaking news. And I just want to share something that's way bigger than any game that's coming up in the next 2 weeks. Andrew Siler is going to be a dad, guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Little baby Siler.
There you go. And we couldn't be happier or prouder. I feel like this kid is going to grow up as a fan of the Number One Bengals podcast. And we will hope to get the kid on the show.
You can name him Hoji, and if a girl, Daddy-o.
Yes, there you go. All right, John. Okay, I want to move on. Unless you have anything else to say. Well, we talked about the Lions. I want to say something
about Joe Burrow's house.
Yeah, I wanted to get to Joe Burrow's house, but first I want to finish on the Lions, John.
On the Lions.
The Detroit Lions had an impressive run, no doubt about it.
Yeah,
but that is nowhere near as impressive as what the Bengals did 2 years ago.
Why not?
Because the Bengals are the only team I can remember in recent years to have that kind of playoff success with no blocking up front, with essentially no offensive line.
You're talking about the first time or the second time?
Both times, but especially the first time. John, I mean, you look at all these other playoff teams.
The first time I give you.
Well, the second time, by the time we got to the AFC Championship game, John, it was the same level of blocking. Like, we were missing so many guys. That offensive line
might have been worse.
Okay. And so, yeah. And so you have, that is almost a miracle, John. I mean, you talk about the Lions, they have a great offensive line. 49ers, I don't know where they are at this point of the season, but they started with a great one. And, you know, any of these teams, I mean, even the Chiefs. Average, you could say average, right, John? Yeah.
And they don't have great receivers either. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The Chiefs have accomplished what they've accomplished because of great coaching and because of certain great role players on the team.
Chiefs have a pretty good offensive line.
Pretty good, yeah.
I think it's okay.
So I just want to say I love the Lions. It's impressive. I love the whole, you know, it has that cachet that, hey, you know, we haven't won for 30 years or whatever. But you are not comparing the same thing here with that Bengals run.
But here's another question. I'm surprised you're not addressing all the conspiracies about the Chiefs that people are saying.
Yeah.
And people are really saying this. I was watching the news. And people are saying that the NFL is fixed so that the Chiefs will win and Taylor Swift will be able to celebrate on camera.
Is this is the first year, John, even with the whole Taylor Swift thing going on, this is the first year I can recall where I don't see any egregious calls in favor of the Chiefs. This is like the best officiating I've seen in the playoffs.
Well, that's because Mahomes was so rude to them. He's lost their...
I think these games have been pretty cleanly called, John, these past few playoff games. Yeah. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say something else. I'm going to finally do it.
Do it.
And admit that Patrick Mahomes is a pretty good quarterback. He's a very good quarterback.
Just pretty good? Okay.
Here's the thing. I was never convinced by his playoff success the way... I didn't think that it was... Well, here's what I mean. John, his first Super Bowl, he was not impressive. He was not. He did not...
No,
he
had quarterback is play. Always impressive, though, Daddy.
Okay, fine. That, you know, he fell apart the second half of that Bengals...
Even Joe Burrow has
AFC Championship game. Yeah, but I understand. And that's exactly what I want to say is what impressed me about Mahomes is... John, he threw like 40 times against the Ravens, one of the best defenses... His yards per attempt was not high. He just got the job done.
He got it done. I give you that.
And that is what I really am starting to respect about Mahomes, the way I do with Burrow, is that he is winning ugly this year. His yards per attempt, his touchdown yards per attempt, they're way down, John. Yeah. He's not the flashy Mahomes of his, you know, first year starting, where he threw 50 touchdowns, you know, 5,000 yards. He's not that Mahomes. He's a grinded out Mahomes. And that's pretty impressive.
There'll come a day when Andrew Seeler is sitting around with his great grandkids, and they're going to be like, "Great granddad, how is it? How was it to be living in a time when you could watch both Pat Mahomes and the great, you know, Joe Burrow playing?"
Well, I'm glad that you can admit the greatness of Joe Burrow on the show. After telling us Lamar Jackson is this, Lamar Jackson is the greatest, he's the best QB, and it's nice to hear you find.
Well, I think Lamar Jackson is quite good. I mean, he didn't do great in one game.
He's never been good in the playoffs. He's never been a good passer in the playoffs.
He had one good playoff game.
That was a game that got out of hand.
He
got the defense loose with his legs, like he always does. And then when things got out of hand, he made some big passes. He's never won a playoff game starting with his arm. John.
I mean, look, if you're going to compare everybody to Joe Burrow, no, there's just one Joe Burrow.
Nobody can.
No one can complain. I get it. I've seen Joe Burrow play. It's once in a lifetime kind of stuff.
I want to hear from John.
John.
About what? I think you've been harsh on Patrick Mahomes, and part of that is because you don't realize that Patrick Mahomes was like 24 in that first Super Bowl. Joe Burrow was still 24 when he was at LSU, essentially. There's a difference here in terms of the experience, and Patrick Mahomes was never considered a finished product when he really even started playing games for the Chiefs. I think what you see now and why you're starting to appreciate it now is because, like, he's at that same point that when, you know, Joe Burrow started to finally mature as a passer. Like, they've gotten essentially to the same point in their careers because Mahomes has played more, but he was started off pretty young. So he's always been phenomenal. I don't think that's ever been the difference. But someone like you who appreciates the other details of quarterback play, you might just finally be starting to realize it.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. But also, John, I'll be honest. It's a little bit of jealousy because I can never admit he's better than Burrow. It's not because I'm a Bengals fan or a Burrow fan. I just don't see it. I just don't see it, John, because Burrow has had much more of an uphill battle. You have to admit it.
Okay, we have to start just for once separating Burrow's play from his offensive line. It can't just be a crutch.
It's the coaching too, John. It's the schemes too. Come on. John, nobody has had to overcome. It's the franchise. It's the franchise history too. It's the franchise history too, John. No. It's all of the stuff that he has done as a leader, as a visionary.
What in God's name did the Chiefs ever do before Patrick Mahomes?
Weren't they in the AFC Championship game like the year before?
No.
They were in the divisional round. I mean, John, what are you talking about?
They were perennial playoff chokers under Andy Reid.
You remember when they had Schottenheimer?
Wait.
They had Schottenheimer. Marty Schottenheimer, that guy was good.
He was the Chargers, wasn't he?
30 years ago.
And then they had the great quarterback.
The Chiefs wanted Montana. Andy Reid. The Chiefs fans wanted Andy Reid out of there before Patrick Mahomes got there.
John, Mahomes plus Reid is fantastic. I acknowledge that. What I'm saying is, John, let me ask you something. Please. Do you think Alex Smith is a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
No. How could Mahomes not win the starting QB job from him his first year? I'll tell you why. And this is not... Hold on, John. I understand. He was very young, John. Mahomes is a guy with perhaps the most physical ability we've ever seen at QB. And I'm not talking Lamar Jackson run around. I'm saying overall physical ability that you need in a QB.
The arm strength, the accuracy.
Arm strength. He's got
the escape.
Good mobility. He's got the
weird walk.
Though. But John, with that sort of ability, if you don't refine it, if you don't sculpt it early on, it can backfire on you.
Sure.
Right? Okay. And so him being in that system that long and toning it down, and I think having Alex Smith as a mentor was the perfect combination. Alex Smith is the opposite. He's too conservative, right? He's just kind of, you know, like you said, dink and dunk. He's always scared. He doesn't, you know, whatever. But I think that, you know, Mahomes, through that process, having a Tyreek Hill who just can get down the field as fast as you want, and Mahomes can sling it and zip it to him immediately, all of that got him on the right track early. Joe Burrow was faced with a mess in Cincinnati. There is a reason that the Bengals had the first overall pick.
He came in.
There's a reason.
AJ
Green was crippled by the time he got done.
Crippled? He was doing great. He was fine.
Joe Burrow has played 1 year of football without Jamar Chase, by the way.
John, we saw him without Jamar Chase and T. Higgins last year, and he was making Trenton Irwin and all these guys look good. John,
I know.
Name me one a starter from the offensive line in Super Bowl 56. Okay,
there you go again, dude. Why can't you compare him as passers?
Okay. Because, John, we saw Mahomes in the Super Bowl with a bad but not historically bad offensive line. Dude. Against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Don't tell me about those incomplete passes. The fancy incomplete passes.
That Chiefs offensive line was worse than the Bengals offensive line in the Super Bowl.
It was not. You cannot. Oh, it does
they
not
gave
get
up
worse.
40 pressures.
John.
It was the worst matchup at the very least because the Bucs were really good rushing the passer that year. But anyways, Mahomes sat for a year. Like, it's not
okay,
like
but
he
that,
was,
that Super not, Bowl was not close. That Super Bowl was not close against the Bucs. Joe Burrow had the game.
I recognize
until
that
the last
he was
two
pressured
minutes.
40 times.
he. Anyways, point is, John,
okay,
you're
okay,
never
okay.
going to be able to convince
me. Let's hold on. Let me just ask one final question. Let's say tomorrow the weirdest thing happened, and for the start of the next season, Joe Burrow goes on the Chiefs, and Mahomes comes on the Bengals. Now, who's the better team? Be honest.
Joe Burrow goes to the Chiefs. Yeah. Mahomes goes to the Bengals.
Yeah. Let's be honest. I'll go first because it's my question. 100%, the Kansas City Chiefs are unbeatable. You put Joe Burrow on that team, he's unbeatable.
I agree.
Mahomes, he would be okay. He would probably not get as far as Burrow, but I think they would be playoff contenders.
I will say this. I think that Mahomes' stats go way up with those kind of receivers, as long as they have okay blocking. But I don't think he can get it done in the playoffs with the Bengals.
No. I don't think he's got the nerves. I don't think he's got the grit.
I just don't think, he's got the confidence. He doesn't have the support.
I think what you remember, you guys are ignoring the spiritual level. Joe Burrow, he gets his powers from an ancient source. From,
he does.
Wait, from crystals, John. Where are you going?
John, come back.
There are, John, listen. This is an ancient
magical
art.
He always leaves
art.
When you bring up crystals. Every time you bring up the crystals, he leaves.
John, I was getting hot.
How do we do the show without John? Is there anybody in the chat who happens to know something about football so you can finish the show? Okay.
Right.
Well, Hoji.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, is that all we got? What about the mansion?
Let's get to
talk about the mansion.
Let's talk about
some dumb stuff until John is okay with us again.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the mansion because...
Show the picture of the mansion.
I don't have it now. But here's the thing, Dr. Hoji, okay? Joe Burrow, we have recently learned that Joe Burrow has bought a $7 million mansion in Cold Stream Country Club.
Okay.
One of the premier private clubs. It's 190 acres.
By the way, and those are the kinds of clubs that don't let us in, Daddy.
Exactly. It has 18-hole golf course, and he bought
it fully
furnished. No, this is all over the place. But here's the thing. This place, John, is so it is so elitist.
Yeah.
It is so what is the word? You know, I couldn't even access their websites. When I wanted to look at the golf course.
It's so exclusive. That's the word you're
looking
for.
It's so exclusive. It's so exclusive that the website required you to be a member to just to look at the golf course online digitally.
Yeah. And it sounds like you don't got it like that.
John, here's
the
thing.
We have money, John. We just, honestly, we're just embarrassing. That's the problem. That's why they don't let us into places like that.
Here's the most interesting part, John. He previously lived in Columbia, Tusculum. Next to who? Next to Bridget Jankars.
Whoa.
Of our show.
Yeah. And Bridget saw him driving on the street once.
Saw him driving on the street and repeatedly approached him about this show. And so now he moves
all the way
out. So
Joe Burrow knows they exist?
Yes.
Wow.
Now he moves all the way out.
Yeah.
And John, I'm a little bit concerned because his previous home was 5 minutes from Paycor Stadium.
Yeah.
And this new place, this new golf course, where he's going to be with his horses and with all the elitists, it is a 15-minute drive, John. That means he's only going to be able to put 1/3 of the work into the offseason.
Unless he gets a faster car.
John, how uncomfortable does it make you to know that Joe Burrow is just living it up now?
Oh, I'm very
By the way, the price of that mansion, $7 million.
I'm very uncomfortable being on the show right now.
Why?
John, spotlight is on you. All right.
$7 million? $8 million.
Was it eight million?
It
was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. John,
in Cincinnati, mind you, where you can get a pretty decent house for like what? $150,000?
Yeah. You can get John, what can you get for $150,000?
2-bedroom?
Not a pretty decent house.
Not a decent house.
You guys haven't been on the market in a while, have you?
No, we bought our houses back in the '80s, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right,
Reagan time.
I think, okay, I guess we're going to do our Super Bowl show and predictions next week. Is that
okay?
Is
well,
that
what should people put in the YouTube? I think in the YouTube comments, you should answer my question. You switch Mahomes and you switch Burrow, and what happens?
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Also, would you trade T. Higgins?
Why are there having like two things? Now no one knows to talk about again.
Okay, okay, forget it. Yeah, Mahomes or Burrow.
And Chiefs, and thumbs Bengals. Up it and like it and subscribe and notifications.
Yeah. Yes.
And follow John on Twitter at John. What was the game?
And send him pictures of your crystals.
Do not send him. No, do not send him crisp pics.
All right. That's all we have.
A to Z Sports, don't forget, John Sheeran.
Don't forget A2ZSports.com/Cincinnati for John Sheeran's article. We'll see you next time. So long. Sweetie.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.